it is digitally adjustable. And even if I accept AM and CW, I bought it to eventually make a communication on 137 kilohertz, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, the lowest band that amateurs are allowed to operate is termed either the 2200 meter band or the 136 kilohertz band.
And it is probably 1 kilohertz wide. It's 136 to 137.
That's a good question. Let me look it up. Okay, there's a bunch of different band plans, apparently. One listed is 135.7 to 136. Another is 136 to 137.4. That's test stations. Telegraphy is 137.4 to 137.6. And non-telegraphy digital modes is listed as 137.6 to 137.8.
W2DSX.
Yes, DSX.
Good evening, Roy, and everyone on the net. Whiskey 2 Delta Sierra X-Ray Jim in Valley Stream. You mentioned SAQ. It used to be doable on Long Island, but with LIPA or whoever's running the power grid now, they have made it tougher with the noise. I just wanted to point out, if anyone wanted to try to get their Christmas Eve broadcast to try the Kiwi SDR network, you'll probably be able to elaborate on that better. There is a couple of stations in Europe that are optimized for VLF, and if you're trying to get SAQ here on the island, to also monitor that on the Internet. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Yeah, I'm sure with the promulgation of software-defined radios on the Internet, WebSDR, and all these other things, you should be able to find some source for very low-frequency reception away from the metropolitan area and give you a better chance of picking up the signal, even though it's going through voice over Internet protocol at some point or another. The original SDR is picking it up on good old RF.
I wish I could recall off the top of my head ones on the Kiwi network that are good for catching SAQ, but it's gotten a lot tougher with the power line management. Whenever we're using to control the grid now on the island, the interference between that and the broadcasters, it's just a hard one to get that low.
No, it's understandable. You know, we live in an urban environment, and I notice that every time I get on HF and I talk to people out there in more suburban and more rural areas where the noise floor is much lower. So I imagine that when it comes to very, very, very low frequency transmissions, that's even worse of a factor there.
Absolutely. Anyways, that's it. Thank you very much for my long-time lurker, and thank you for keeping the net going. W2DSX.
Very good, Jim. Well, you know, if you ever feel like participating again, you're more than welcome. Okay, we had some doubling, Wes. I heard, I believe it was Frank from Echolink. So let's give the repeater a chance to drop so that Frank can mention what he wanted to say. So take it away, Frank.
Hello. Okay, very good. The repeater tail seems a little shorter, so it's maybe a little easier to get in now. In any case, could be mistaken, but I believe those narrow shift encrypted RITI signals down below 20 kilohertz are large stations talking to the U.S. submarine fleet. They may be even lower in frequency, though. But anyway, I remember reading that they use ELF to communicate to submarines underwater because the signals that ELF penetrate the earth and penetrate the seawater. Go ahead.
Yeah, Frank, we kind of talked about this about 6 months or so ago. The problem with extremely low frequency is the symbol rate is very low, so the amount of data that you can transfer using that method is somewhat limited. And it's been my understanding and one of the reasons why we were able to gain access to some of the very low frequency bands is that the Navy made it known that they were moving away from that type of technology. I think they were more interested in raising buoys to the surface of the water and then going through overhead satellite system. That way transmissions could be secured and high data rates could be had.
Yeah, I think they do it a lot that way, but in contested areas, as I think they say in military speak, you don't want to raise a buoy and let your adversary know your submarine's position. So there may still be a role for the ELF, even though the symbol rate is so slow, about all you can do is send, like, as I understand it, one letter, meaning execute your orders or something like that. Go ahead.
Well, unfortunately, as far as I'm aware, it's above all of our security levels, so we can only guesstimate what the military does. I am sure there are ways to obscure little buoys. We're not talking about the massive things that just kind of radiate all kinds of electromagnetic waves and kind of introduce themselves to the crowd. I'm sure there are stealth technologies. There are probably relay buoys where you can kind of plant one under the surface of the water, travel a distance away, remotely cause it to float to the surface, and then a short connection, which won't be close enough for anyone to attack you with the information. But again, all beyond my my top secret grades, so I'm just making stuff up as I go along.
Yeah, I think I understand what you're talking about. My understanding is what they use is lasers to talk to the satellites. There is actually no RF, just a very narrow laser beam that's very difficult to deflect, to detect. But I would suspect they still want to avoid to the maximum extent possible having a visually visible buoy. And I've read there are some techniques, like you said, that have the buoy sink under the water as soon as the traffic is passed or something like that. It makes sense that they're moving away from the ELF technology. You know, that requires submarine to trail an extremely long antenna, which, of course, creates problems of its own. Go ahead.
Yeah, and in addition, we kind of live in a data-rich environment these days. you know, gone are the days where a 300 baud modem is going to get you anywhere. So, you know, I think the military, like anyone else in the 21st century, wants a wide bandwidth transmission line.
Yeah. I know they've modernized their message traffic. There's an article, I think, in the Times a couple of years ago, that maybe it was on some of the amateur radio sources also, that they no longer require their message traffic to be sent only using uppercase characters and symbols that can be transmitted in the old Bordeaux RTTY, because they no longer use that. Go ahead.
Yes, Ed.
I have some knowledge in that area. In recent years, the U.S. military has spent billions on maintaining data to get around the fog of war, that all platforms have access to what all the other platforms see. And obviously that requires huge data rates, highly encrypted.
Yeah, well, encryption is very important. Encryption technology is another very fascinating subject. I've read extensively about it, and a lot of people, unfortunately, do encryption wrong, but when done right, and also counter efforts. That's what a lot of investment in quantum computers is all about, being able to factor large prime numbers and basically decode the present state-of-the-art encryption technologies. You know, it's a cat-and-mouse game. I'm always kind of amused and reminded they were able back in the Enigma times to one of the helpful things that the Germans did to help the Allies decode Enigma was that almost every message would be either begin or end with Sieg Heil, you know. So they had a constant to deal with, you know, Heil Hitler and such nonsensical things were. So they had a unchanging text to base the algorithms on. Yes, Ed.
That is lesson one in cryptography and has been so probably for thousands of years. If there is anything standard to a message, that's where you start looking first.
Yep. That was mistake number one, two, and three. But, you know, the most anal retentive people out there still make mistakes, and I'm very thankful for that.
It is about BLF.
Okay.
That was the email that I sent you. That was September 4, 2021. There was a number of links there. And everything was related to very low frequency. So it was related to Swedish very low frequency VLF test transmission on 17.2 kilohertz. So we talked about similar frequency that is used by Anderson. And that was by Swedish Amateur Radio Association. From the helpful information is that the receiver AOR 5000, it's American receiver, America-built receiver, probably few people have it, attunes to 5 kilohertz.
Shut up.
Wesley?
Yes, sir.
I kind of think AOR is a Japanese company. Could be wrong, but I think so.
Or maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you're right. Okay. Yeah, I can go there for that. Then, interesting is the description. A ULF, ultra-low frequency, is from 1 hertz to 300 hertz. ELF, extremely low frequency band, is from 300 hertz to 3 kilohertz. And VLF, very low frequency, is from 3 to 30 kilohertz. The article that is in this email says, my last great catch was at 8 kilohertz transmission from VLF transmitter receiver water pipe leak locator that was used by a plumber searching for the location of the water leak from pipes under my garden. That was in Australia. There is information about Sweden transmitter, right? Test and some interesting way of building your own receiver, which is the sound card base. So you have a computer with the sound card, and you can download the VLF software for the receiver, and you can connect to the microphone input the long wire. But the link with the software doesn't work, so probably it needs to be searched for.
Okay. By the way, their headquarters is in Tokyo, Japan. They have, of course, a distributorship offices in the United States. They make very nice radios that do things that most other radios don't do. I remember I was looking for one of those all-in-one digital voice technology radios that decode Fusion and DMR and D-Star. Problem with that is, it's receive only, it's not transmit, and they're very expensive designs. They easily cost more than $1,000 for a glorified scanner. But a lot of features. The user interface, I guess because it's a Japanese company, is kind of not that great, but certainly multifunction radios they produce.
Thank you for that information. I remember that, but it was quite time when I was looking at that information. The program that worked with the computer sound card was written by SM6LKM, Sierra Mexico 6LKM. It's called SAQ. That worked from 0 to 22 kilohertz. There is some variation of the program that works to 30 kilohertz. So it's actually in within the range of what we need for if someone wants to have an access to it and to exchange.
Okay. Living in this area, probably there's a lot of background noise going on that's going to obscure that. But everyone is free to try.
It might be a little close to Russian submarine Navy broadcast frequency, which is 18.1 kilohertz, but I don't believe it's so strong in here. We are in the United States, so it should not be very much disturbing. The 19.8 is Royal Australian Navy submarine broadcast station, is also far away. The 21.4 is American Submarine Navy Broadcast Station, but 17.4 is quite a distance, so it should not interfere with that. And eventually, for those who do not want to listen by themselves, there is live transmission on the YouTube channel. Let me jump. Another one is 22.2 kilohertz. It's JJI, Japanese Navy Submarine Broadcast Station. It's still far away. 25.0, another Russian submarine. 40 kilohertz Japan, 54 kilohertz US. So it's quite far away. It's not going to disturb. 60 kilohertz is Japan again, and 68.5 is China kilohertz. So, yeah, it would be a nice experience. Back to Yan Trixin.
Yes, indeed. If anyone wants to try it and come back and tell us if they got anywhere using all the different methods that we discussed tonight, that would make for a good conversation.
A lot of things could be heard on those low frequencies. All kinds of noises could be spotted, starting from your refrigerator to plenty of other devices, but that's at much lower frequency. If somebody wants to listen, the lowest frequency I can go for is 47 hertz. Interaction.
Okay, very good. My radios don't have that bandwidth. I think my flex goes down to 700 kilocycles, so that's way too high for this type of stuff. But I have nothing that antenna-wise that would work with it right here, right now. So I guess we could always listen into the SDR feeds if we're so inclined. Personally, I think at 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm going to be sleeping soundly.
Yeah. Another tip for the antenna, if you remember the old Japanese radios from 60s, 50s, those portables radio, there were plenty of them in the United States. The cheap radios, they had a ferrite base rod, ferrite rod with the coil on the top. Do you remember those?
Yes, I think most transistor AM radios used ferrite bars as an antenna.
Right. So this is an excellent antenna for very low frequency. If somebody has the old radio, you can actually take it out. If not, the rod and try to wind a few winds on it. Yes, you will not have perfect match for the frequency of choice, but it would work pretty well. Enter again.
Well, it worked very good for the medium wave broadcast band. Your mileage might vary.
Yeah, the receiver, professional receiver, is HP 3586B. HP 3586B. It's selective level meter. But actually, all selective level meters works pretty good in low frequencies. They're not terribly expensive, although this is an extremely professional radio. And to actually add up.
Okay. These days I'm not looking for another radio. I have more than enough stacked right next to me, and I'm happy with them, but you never know what the future will bring. There's always another gadget waiting to be bought.
No, I understand that, but there are plenty of selective level meters on the market right now, and you can buy them for quite good price. Depends from what frequency you are looking for. So, in my situation, I believe One radio starts from below 50, so it's 47 hertz, up to 32 megahertz in one radio. And that's what the selective meter is. And it gives you a precise information about the signal and direction.
Okay, good to know. I think you mentioned it months ago on the technical net.
I was talking about the different one. Hold on, let me put a light on it. Okay, that is PSM 139, Wendell and Goldman. Be honest, I like it much better than HP. But both of them, they give you CWDs, they give you SSB, single sideband, they give you AM. The interesting is the story about them, because they were meant to work with the telephone industry. They were trying to see how wide spectral frequency they can send over the wire. That was 70s, 80s, and 90s, going up to 2004, and then around that time, probably the fiber resolution was quietly waking up. Back to you.
Okay.
And then, all of a sudden, every manufacturer stopped to make them. So, it's also very important if you look at the radio. It has the same model number, but the year of production is 2004 and 2007 is good. Now, in 2008, there was still a similar radio, but then in miniature version, which was portable. I never had that radio, so I cannot say anything about it, but I assume it was just the same features, but it's a receiver. I'm talking of the radio, but I have in mind a receiver. Quite portable, also for telephone industry, and you can connect the antenna to it. Although with HP, it's very much non-traditional connection, the telephone jack connection, but the newer version from 2008 has the PNC connector on it. The same is with Wendell and Goldman. Goldman, but that radio has BNC. Now I like it much better because in that one radio you have a generator and you have a receiver. So actually you can connect generator to the receiver and you have a transmitter and you have a receiver. The story was that if somebody 10,000 miles from that point, or 1,000 miles from that point, has the same receiver, they can simply call each other and then say, hey, who's going to be transmitter, who's going to be receiver? But that unit is like a pre-spectrum analyzer. Enter XGN.
Oh, okay, it has more features. And I tend to prefer BNC connectors to SMA connectors. I think they hold stress a lot better. I've seen too many of those smaller connectors snap off at the PC board.
Yeah, and it's something that I was always wanted to have. It was like a dream. So since I'm into the VLF very much, that was the reason why I got a few of them. So, yeah, if I have a time, I'm not going to be sleeping. So, hopefully, I'm going to have a good experience. Thank you, Jim.
Well, I hope you do, Wesley, and I hope you come back and tell us about it.
Yep, possibly. Okay, so it's 2031. We know that we're not going to have a space report tonight, but maybe at least a few key points you got on the net from our space report professional.
I'm not quite sure what you're getting at, Wesley. I did not plan to do a kind of a short form SpaceNet report. Paul does an excellent job, and I'm sure I couldn't reproduce it.
Did I understand that Paul is not going to be today in the beginning of the net, or I got it wrong?
No, he's here. He's listening to us. He's typing away in the chat room, but he has an upper respiratory tract infection, and he has a hoarse voice, and he'd like to rest it tonight.
Okay. No, I just wondered if he could type a few keywords about the news in space, if he cannot talk.
Let's see. I know they expected to get less. Paul just kind of wrote in the chat room, "I am sick, Wes." So maybe he doesn't feel like doing that. I could understand. I mean, would you like to type up a speech on in the chat room type of thing? You know, it's another job.
Yes, of course, he's right. I was thinking about if there is anything absolutely... like a keyword. Okay, it isn't. I can Google it. But anyhow, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Oh, brother.
Well, you're welcome, Wes. Once again, I'm AC2GS. Name is Roy. This is the Limark Technical Net. Usually, this is more than enough time. I would turn it over to Paul for the SpaceNet report. But again, he's a little bit under the weather, and I hope he gets well very, very soon, because we missed the SpaceNet report. But if anyone's interested in continuing on until 11 o'clock, I'm more than happy to. If everyone wants to leave, we'll do that too. It depends on everyone. So if you got any other questions or comments for tonight and would like to address them, please hit that push-to-talk button, give me your first name and your call sign.
B2BXO. I can give you a couple of comments if you like.
Certainly, Frank.
Yeah, what Wesley may be thinking of is that the Artemis 1 mission splashed down today. And unfortunately, like Wesley sort of expected, Paul to be up for covering it. I didn't really get a lot of details, but I think most people who are interested have seen the spectacular pictures and probably saw the splashdown on TV already. So that's probably the biggest thing that's going on. Go ahead.
Yeah, I would agree as well. That seems to be the freshest news in space. Hopefully Paul will give his summation next Sunday night when his throat is better.
Yeah, I think it'll be real interesting to hear what he gathers on it. And next week's probably better anyway because there'll probably be a lot more information and probably a lot more pictures are released by NASA now that the spacecraft is back. I'm kind of amazed they got it back since the capsule itself was damaged by the hurricane just before launch and they decided to go anyway. which I thought was kind of interesting. But apparently they know what they're doing, and the heat shield and structure weren't damaged, and made it through its mission and came back okay, and that probably proved to them something also about the amount of damage the capsule can sustain and still function properly. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I think NASA has the ability to kind of have a little bit more wiggle room with spacecraft that are not manned, worst-case scenarios being worst-case scenarios. And I think at this point a lot of them felt that they needed a win. They had delayed and delayed and delayed, and that's not good for public relations.
Well, if the spacecraft hadn't made it through reentry, that wouldn't have been good for PR also, though it would have also given them some valuable information if it didn't. Also, unfortunately, the public doesn't recognize that. Fortunately, that did not happen. The capsule made it through its entire automated mission and came back, and it'll be very interesting, apparently. It sounds like the iPad on board with their version, their proprietary version of Alexa, I forget what they call her, made it through the mission without being destroyed by air radiation, which is one of the things they wanted to determine also. So the results of the mission should be really, really interesting. Go ahead.
Yes, indeed. Well, you know, I mean, I don't know if the software is that much of a problem. The problem with cosmic rays and such is the hardware not getting the memory corrupt and other problems that ionizing radiation is going to do. So it's more of a hardware thing than a software. You can design software to work around failures, I guess, but ultimately you try and want to engineer hardware that's bulletproof.
Yeah, well, I think the experiment was, I think this was an off-the-shelf iPad they were running the software on. They wanted to see whether, as I understand it, they wanted to see if the memory would get too corrupted by cosmic rays, the hardware would be too corrupted by cosmic rays for the software to operate. And as far as we know now, it sounds like that did not happen in the software that operated throughout the mission. Go ahead.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I mean, you can design software with redundancy and redundancy check algorithms, a lot like what FT8 is for us. So that you could knock out a whole bunch of bits due to cosmic rays and still work around it. So maybe that's part of what they were trying for. Rather than re-engineer the iPad, they just want to make a bulletproof operating system. I would think that you could kind of simulate a lot of that at home. There's more than enough cosmic ray emitters that, you know, JPL probably has in their back in their closets and such. So you could probably do a very good simulation to get a good idea of what will work and what won't work. But you know, ultimately, the best test is a real one.
Yeah, well, I guess that's what they wanted to do. I know we have other people on the net who can address this a lot more. And I know there's been a trend in NASA and in DOD, I think, also. And if one of our experts on this wants to tell me I'm all wet on this, it's fine. I think my understanding is there's been a trend toward what's called COTS, commercial off-the-shelf, because of all the criticism the military got over the years for things like the $50,000 coffee pot that was custom-built for the B-52 bomber because a commercial one wouldn't fit. Go ahead.
Yeah, I've heard similar things, and it makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, a lot of the $50 billion toilets and such, there were other versions that were completely made-up stories. There's a very, very old story that NASA spent millions of dollars engineering the famous space pen. And when the Russians found out about it, they went over to their desk, pulled out an old wooden pencil, sharpened it with a razor blade, and handed it to their astronauts. Kind of apocryphal story. Since the space pen wasn't researched or designed by NASA, a company had simply come up with a pressurized gas a pen that would work in zero gravity, and they promoted and sold it at a loss to NASA. So, you know, there's a lot of stories that are true, and there's a whole bunch of stories that aren't quite true.
Yeah, I'm sure that's the case. The Russians have, over the years, been very good at these rough-and-ready solutions that NASA spends a fortune on. For instance, using off-the-shelf VHF radios to do their downlinks on just below the 2-meter bands, when NASA spent all this money on the Deep Space Network and S-band gear at a time when S-band was very exotic and the stuff was very expensive. Go ahead.
Well, you know, we've always been a richer country with more assets and more readily spend it than the Russians do. You know, I mean, the whole point, the whole failure with the USSR, it kind of, they basically just ran out of money. Thankfully, they weren't aware that Ronald Reagan's Star Wars initiative was nonsense, and they tried to figure out a way around a non-existent Star Wars defense and ran out of money. The problem, though, with the Russians in the past, and I don't want to make it sound like an anti-Russian screed, they really didn't value the life of their astronauts a lot more than their present Army people. They wouldn't announce a mission until it was successful, because if it wasn't successful, they buried the damn thing along with the astronaut. So, you know, I mean, you know, in some ways, it's nice to know that people found a less expensive way around things, but they cut a lot of corners in their days.
WA2CDL.
Yes, Andy.
Yeah, I've been listening, saying hello. I don't want to interrupt, which I already did. So, a couple of things I want to mention. If after you finish the CUSO, I'll wait if you want.
Okay, very good, Andy. You know, we're just discussing space, the final frontier.
Yeah, I've been listening. I hear it. I hear the discussion.
Yeah. Andy, I think you know a lot more about this stuff than I do, if I remember correctly. Am I generally correct, or are there some corrections or more precise information you want to throw in here without making this a procurement seminar? Go ahead.
Okay. No, I don't think I know quite a bit of stuff. I'm not sure what you're referring to, first of all, in dealing with space. I know Paul's not on tonight. But when it comes to repairing or taking something apart, that's my expertise, as Roy knows. Everything else is everything else. Okay, back to you, and I forgot your name, I'm sorry. My memory is terrible.
Okay, I think you were talking to me, Frank, WB2BXO. I may be thinking of a different Andy who is on this net quite a bit. so I'm probably all wet too, so to speak. Anyway, let me pass it back to Paul. I'm having a senior moment here also, what can I say? Anyway, Paul, why don't you pick it up and go on with the net? I don't want to monopolize it here, Gary.
Frank, Paul is under the weather. He's resting his vocal cords tonight.
Yeah, you did say that, Roy. I'm sorry, I misspoke. I meant you, Roy. So, I'm thinking Paul, because, you did mention he was under the weather. That was my mistake. I meant to pass it to you, Roy. Go ahead.
Yeah, no problem. Like I mentioned before, the government plans work in mysterious ways. I kind of am thankful that they're taking this new approach. I just hope that they have built-in redundancies. I was concerned with their initial purchase of one company's rocket technology at the absence of anyone else's, because, if something happens to that technology, you're kind of stuck with nothing. So they seem to now be more interested in redundant plans just in case their primary suppliers fail.
Well, the problem is, as I understood it initially, that Congress only gave them enough money to buy from one company. And then when the other companies filed a bid protest, which was resolved by my old employer, the GAO, I think ultimately Congress said, okay, we'll let out enough money to get some other contractors. So I think there was more than one reason for that, as well as having a second source also to amicably settle the bid protest without it being tied up in court forever. Go ahead.
Yeah, I heard something similar. Whatever the rationale, whatever the reason, I think it was a good decision that they made. Hopefully they'll stick to it, because I don't know. I don't think it's good to put all your eggs in one little basket there, especially when these baskets are owned by billionaires who get distracted way too easily and go off to do some other damage in some other sector of business.
Yeah. So I think, as you mentioned, either you or Paul mentioned last week, I think some of the team at SpaceX is perfectly happy that the billionaire who shall remain nameless is distracted so they can do their job and try to get their BFR flying. Good.
Yes, I would agree. I've heard more than enough rumors of what goes on in all these places that they're probably sleeping a little bit better these days, as opposed to the poor people at Twitter.
Yeah, my understanding is a lot of their customers are moving over to something called Mastodon. People are rapidly giving up on Twitter.
A Mastodon is a similar application. It's a little bit more obscure. Its user interface isn't quite as friendly. So I'm not quite sure if everyone's going to just seamlessly slide over from Twitter to Mastodon. This might be an opportunity for someone clever to kind of build up a social network in the image of what Twitter used to be, except with a stronger idea of how to monetize it, which has always been a problem. I've heard about Mastodon being mentioned, but apparently it's not as easy as Twitter was. I don't know if Twitter will – I assume it'll never be what it was again. He's kind of kicked it in the groin way too many times. It won't die, I don't think, but it will be a weaker version of itself and much more twisted and biased and unmoderated, which inevitably is probably going to lead to a lot of suits by the federal government and by the European Union. You know, he'll need a couple more lawyers.
Well, that's how they monetize these things. To paraphrase the bard, pay all the lawyers.
Yeah, if you graduated from a good law school, you have a decent future. Although I think the majority of people with law degrees do not practice law, so it really depends on your connections and your credentials. So out there, if you want your kid or your grandkid or your great-grandkid to have a good living, have them go to Harvard Law or Yale Law. And he could probably be a Supreme Court justice. Anyway, Frank, it's great talking to you as always. We're coming close to the end of the night, and I want to get to Andy. He had a few things to say. So I thank you very much for helping me here and participating as always. It's a pleasure to talk to you, Frank.
Yeah, okay, 7-3. I guess we all tend to get a little long-winded here. Anyway, you go on with the next section of the network, WB2BXL. Thanks.
Okay, very good, Frank. Andy, what would you like to say tonight?
All right, WB2CDL. Well, first of all, I just got an email positively saying that I was approved for a table, for having a table down in at the Hamcation in Orlando. So now I'm moving forward to finalize the things I need to do to get down there and a place to stay and everything else. And I'm meeting a friend of mine who's also coming in for that week, because he has a conference that he's attending, so we're going to stay together. So that's a good thing. And I just got the email about 20 minutes ago, so I'm happy for that. So good. And the other thing is, I did look up the Alexander event. I looked at the website and I see what when it will be and the frequencies I wrote down that they're going to be using. You know, interestingly enough, I have a nice receiver that would pick up the signal. Of course, if I had the proper antenna for it. It's actually a selective voltmeter made by Hewlett Packard. And mine goes from 50 cycles continuously to 32 megs. And it's got a very narrow bandwidth, and that's the beauty of it, because it is a selective level receiver, or selective voltmeter, if you want to call it that. It's got a very narrow filter in it. But I can tune down that low. I probably could tune it down with that low on my other radio, which I have to check to see how far down it goes. But that radio would be... EHP is very, because of the narrow bandwidth, it's sensitive, and I can get down to a very low noise floor, and of course the dynamic range, in the narrow mode is pretty wide, so I'll be able to hear a signal. So I can play around with that, but I got that information, so that was the other thing I wanted to mention. So I was listening in, I did look it up. And what else? And that's it right now. Back to you.
Okay, for anyone interested, if you go to my link page, all you have to do is type into the browser roy.ac2gs.com, and it's the fourth item on the top of the page. So if you don't want to Google Alexander Association SAQ, you can simply find the link and click it. Okay, anything else, Andy, before we call it a night?
No, I'm going to watch the news because it's just about 11 o'clock, so the timing is good. And let's see what's going on in the rest of the world. I know they convicted that Scotland terrorist, that plane that I forget how you pronounce it, Lockerbie, Scotland. The plane that went down how many years ago? It's a long time. That was on the news. That's it. I'm going to watch the news and call it a day.
Okay, very good, Andy. Thanks for coming in and participating. Thanks to everyone who participated. Let me quickly run down the usual links. If you want to contact me, the email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Links to interesting articles, YouTubes, and such that I've seen over the past week are listed in my link page. You can get it by typing into your browser roy.ac2gs.com. We have the audio stream of the Glen Oaks Repeater, available almost 24/7. Occasionally the computer does hiccup. You can get onto the audio stream by just typing into your browser technet.ac2gs.com. And, of course, I'd like to always remind people that Mike, KC2NJI, has a great archive site called amateurradio.tv. With archives of the Technical Net going as far back as September 2006. So please avail yourself of it. As Dick, K2RIW, always ended his Technical Nets with the suggestion to be kind to each other. I think that's always good advice, especially now. We live in troubled times, war and rumor of war, pestilence and what have you. No doubt COVID is going to make a mild uptick in the United States because of the cold weather and the social non-distancing that Thanksgiving and Christmas and New Year produce. So there's always that. So take care of yourself and be smart and don't put yourself at additional risks. Let me drop for a sec. Also, I want to remind people, one of my favorite quotes from the Greek philosopher Epictetus, it's impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. So keep an open mind and don't always think that everything you know is exactly right. Because I'm sure, in my case, I know, and in your case, there's some things we carry around that are totally erroneous. Also, just want to remind people, and I'll remind them again next week, not next week's Technical Net, but the week after would come out on December 25th, Christmas Day. And so we're going to suspend that episode of the Technical Net. So it'll go from the 18th, and the next one after the 18th will be the New Year's Day, January 1st, 2023. But I'll remind you about that next week when I shut things down. As always, thanks to everyone who came. Thanks to everyone who participated. I hope you had a good time. I hope you learned a few things. I hope you taught a few things. And I hope you'll join us again next Sunday night at 8 o'clock when we try and do it all over again. And I hope that Paul gets well really soon and is able to join us once again next Sunday. So to everyone, have a great week. Be well. Stay safe. This is AC2GS formally ending this episode of the Limark Technical Net, and I am clear. Yes, Ed.
Next Sunday night, I believe, is the first Hanukkah candle. All impact?
Yeah, I'm aware that isn't going to really impact me that much.
You got it. Thanks.